without repeating too much of what I said yesterday, I think it is clear in three ways that illicit financial flows, as used within the target in the Sustainable Development Goals, is intended to go well beyond what is strictly illegal. And that's for three reasons, as I say. Partly, just the definition. You know, the word illicit means something bigger than illegal. But the main reason, really, is the political one. The discussion when the SDG target was being framed followed from two main reports. One was the report with a number of chairs, including David Cameron from the UK, which framed a broad set of possible goals as expert advice to the Secretary General. And that report, if you read it, mentions multinational tax avoidance repeatedly, more than almost any other issue. And it's kind of there again and again and again. There is no target in their proposal which mentions avoidance explicitly. So either they mentioned it a lot of times and then they forgot to include a target, or they decided at the last minute that it wasn't that important, or it's included in the target that they propose, which is to reduce illicit financial flows. And I think it's pretty clear that that's the intention. The other major report, of course, is the Mbeki panel's report, the high-level panel on illicit financial flows out of Africa, which uses the language of the GFI definition on illegality, but again is dominated in substance by multinational tax behaviours. And there's no question, when you talk to people who are in the room with when the framing discussions were taking place, that multinational tax behaviour was part of the intention of the scope of the target that was agreed. But then finally, even if we said for some reason we might want to, you know, to go back, to change this target, to change what was intended, we look at the data, the estimates we have, and we find that, you know, the most robust estimates of large-scale revenue losses relate to this area. Why would we take this out? Why would we say this most important thing should actually be left out and we'll focus on these other ones that are smaller? You know, there simply isn't a good reason to do this, and we should really resist it. Now, if multinational companies are uncomfortable being included in a discussion with the word illicit in the framing, then I'm sorry, but you need to think about your behaviour rather than challenging this unfortunate framing. The other point Ifueko made, which I think was a very good one, is that, you know, there is a bit of a risk in the IFF umbrella being so broad that we include lots of very different behaviours in there, behaviours which are motivated by different things and which may use different channels. And perhaps putting it all together from a policy perspective is unhelpful. We put it together in order to say, here's a big thing that we need to do something about, but then to discuss policy, actually, it's probably more easy, more straightforward to separate those things out. The difficulty with doing that, though, is that if we look at the research, we look at the analysis that we have of the channels that are used, we find that different motivations for illicit flows, for example, laundering of the proceeds of crime, can lead you to use a lot of the same channels that multinationals may use for profit shifting. You know, as Sol has said, these systems developed because different users found them to help them, and they were used by different ones, and the fact that multinationals use particular types of jurisdiction in some sense gives them legitimacy for when criminals use the same jurisdiction. So it's very difficult to separate out either the channels or the motivations completely, and therefore we end up thinking about the policy measures that respond to all the channels, recognising that that's going to have an impact in shutting down the laundering of the proceeds of crime, and also, for example, in making it harder for multinationals to shift their profits. And we just need to recognise that these things are interrelated because of the ways that they're used for different practices. What that gives us, though, is the common feature of illicit flows. The legality may not always be clear, but what is clear is that the processes are being hidden in order not to have public accountability. Whether that's because you don't want to be to face criminal prosecution, or because you don't want to face public condemnation, the fact remains that what you're going to do is hide it so that you don't have to be out there and accountable. And that gives us something we can really work with. We can continue, and we should continue, trying to come up with measures of scale, the best estimates that we can get for these phenomena which are being deliberately hidden. But we also need to recognise that they are being deliberately hidden, and the chances are, almost by definition, we won't have data that fully captures them. So the other thing we can think about is a set of measures that would pick up the policy responses. And for that, you know, we can go back to the Tax Justice Network's original policy platform on tax transparency, which gives us a set of areas, you know, effectively the three main areas of opacity in which illicit flows are able to flourish. And we call this the ABC of tax transparency. So A is for automatic exchange of tax information. If every jurisdiction was providing information automatically to every other jurisdiction on the holdings of their residents, so for example, Switzerland was telling Kenya every year, these are the holdings of Kenyan citizens in Swiss bank accounts and related financial instruments, then automatically the Kenyan tax authority is able to compare that with what's being declared here by Kenyan citizens. And you immediately have a set of red flags. Where should we be asking the questions? Where should we go? And in fact, what we know is that from data on US tax compliance, when you have automatic provision of information not from the taxpayer, tax compliance goes up by 7 or 8 times. Right? If you know somebody else is giving this information to the tax authority, you automatically become much more compliant. And so that information is one key piece. The second one is beneficial ownership, B. If we had public registers in every jurisdiction of the beneficial owners of companies, trusts, and foundations, then the scope for people to conduct business, including for tax purposes, but also all sorts of other criminality, anonymously, would be largely eliminated. Instead of thinking that anonymous businesses should be a natural part of our activity in our economic markets and our taxpayers, we should actually reject this. You know, no business ever functions better because it's anonymous. No laws are ever more respected because it's anonymous companies that are obeying them. No taxes are better paid because the taxpayers are anonymous. There are no good reasons to allow these anonymous entities to exist. And you know, happily, we now have a global instrument for automatic exchange of information, and we are moving towards an international standard for public registers, at least for the ownership of companies, and we need to see trusts and foundations brought in too. Finally, the C of tax transparency is country-by-country reporting. Do we have that data, for which there's now an OECD standard, in the public domain, so that all of us can see, through that country-by-country reporting in the public domain, the share of companies' economic activity in each jurisdiction and the extent to which their profits are aligned with that or not. Are they doing 80% of their activity in Kenya but only declaring 10% of their profits here? Do you have a different ratio in Luxembourg or in Mauritius? That information in the public domain alone would drive accountability of companies, but would also show which countries are losing out and which countries are benefiting, and allow us to ask questions to each of those actors about whether they are doing the job that they should be doing. So if we had measures, indicators of the extent to which countries were providing or meeting their responsibilities under each of the A, B, and C, we'd automatically have measures which drive accountability, which reduce illicit financial flows directly. But in addition, we'd have the data that would allow us to put measures of the scale of the problem. So from automatic information exchange, we could have governments declaring each year, this is the share of, for all of the what we're being told is the assets of our citizens elsewhere, this is the proportion that are being declared to us by those citizens. And the gap would tell you how big a problem you have in non-declaration of wealth overseas. For beneficial ownership, we could simply ask each country to record what proportion of the companies, trusts and foundations that they allow to be established in their jurisdiction. They are requiring public declarations of the ownership to understand what the gap is on a country-by-country basis in terms of anonymous ownership. And finally, for country-by-country, as I was arguing yesterday, having that data in the public domain would allow us to see at the aggregate level the extent to which each country is or is not getting a share of profit declared for tax purposes that's aligned with its share of economic activity. Who has too much profit, who's sucking the profit from elsewhere, and who is losing out and failing to make any progress about it. The set of accountabilities that would stem from this over the period of the Sustainable Development Goals to 2030 would give us, you know, an enormously powerful opportunity to really move all of these flows towards complete eradication. If we're serious about doing this, we've got about 1 year to get this locked into the UN process, and all of your governments are key players in doing that.